I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Impact Earth Energy. There are times when I'm preparing for a show that I feel inspired to mix things up a bit in terms of the introduction of my guest, and this is certainly one of them. On some level, this podcast is about the role of electric companies in building resilient communities. On another level, it's about corporate leadership, and in this case, visionary leadership. As a woman in a leadership role in our community, I stand in awe of the person we get to spend some time with today. Her journey is both a profound and increasingly impactful one. Stay with me for the duration so you can learn more about both. I believe that it's vital that existing organizations within our communities have a place at the table when it comes to having an active role in the process of building resilient communities. It has never been more important. There is such an important role utilities can play to help to build those resilient, thriving communities through reliability, sustainability, and community support. Susan Gray is our guest, and she is the president and CEO of Tucson Electric Power Company in Tucson, Arizona. She has the place at the table as a visionary leader driving an electric company's commitment to being a good corporate citizen in these specific areas, as well as supporting social justice and equity initiatives. Susan, it is so great to finally get you all to myself for an hour. I've been really looking forward to this one.
Yes, me too, Gina. Thank you so much. And I'm really honored by that introduction. Thank you.
Well, there's a little bit more that I have to say because it's you know, you're a female leader in a utility company. So I want to put a highlight on that because it really matters to a lot of our listeners and maybe some young women who are listening out there. You are indeed the president and CEO of Tucson Electric Power, of Unisource Energy Services and their parent company, UNS Energy Corporation in Tucson, Arizona. And I just want you to share for a bit how you got to sit in the chair you're in, because it's a great and compelling story of where you started at the company.
Yeah, thank you so much. So it's been an awesome journey. And I actually started with the company as an engineering intern years ago. And HR loves that story because they tell all of our interns, look what you can do.
I tell the story the too. Yes. You could be the CEO someday.
Any day, yeah. But really, you know, it's been a really rewarding career. And I know that you are friends with Dave Hutchins. You've interviewed him on your show many times. And he's just been a great champion for me, a mentor for me, and really helped provide some opportunities for me to grow in my leadership. And I had several mentors along the way. Started as an engineer, went over to the operations group, which is not a typical female role, to lead line construction. So that was a really, really fun and interesting role early in my career, and then kind of grew up through the operations part of the company until I became the chief operating officer. And then last year was promoted to president and then started in the CEO role just this year in January.
I mean, it's like, bam, I used to have a bell in the studio and I want to like ring the bell to get people's attention because it really is an amazing and inspirational story. And I'm glad that HR tells your interns because we need more female engineers. That seems to always be the case. And I know it's gotten a little better, but if this show inspires one young woman to change her major or to stick with her major, to me, it's worth it.
Absolutely.
You know, in my journey, it has morphed into, we didn't always talk about resilient communities. We talked about climate change and raising awareness about that. And honestly, for the most part, that is so yesterday because people know it's here. They get it. They read the newspaper. They have been impacted in some way or their family members have. But there's a lot that goes into building resilient communities. And when it comes to your talking about this topic, can you not only share with us your enthusiasm about TEP's role in being part of doing that, but tie in both climate and grid resilience? Because I'm nervous with the temperatures at 113 degrees. So why is it important that utilities have a seat at the table? What are the key ways that you can help?
Yeah, and I'm a little nervous this week too, Gina, as it's getting pretty hot.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, you know, I think you named the three key ways that we support our community to really be resilient and thrive, and that's through reliability, sustainability, and community support. And And reliability is so important because we want to transition to these renewable energy resources, but we want to do it in a way that really, you know, we make sure that the lights are on, that we're able to continue to function as a society. And you know, it's just reliability supports our modern lives. And it makes it possible for people to do big things like saving lives, running businesses, educating children, as well as the little things, you know, just enjoying a morning cup of coffee or making dinner with our families or reading to our kids at night. So reliability is really at the heart of what we do. And then, you know, you mentioned sustainability. Of course, we want to protect our planet by transitioning to cleaner energy resources that help us combat climate change. That's really the path that we're on. And we want to do this in a way that supports our community. So we want to make sure that we're providing affordable energy service. We also are really involved in philanthropy that assists our low-income residents. We want to promote educational achievement and protect our environment, as well as promoting social justice and equity.
And like, it's a big bam because you're doing that. And boy, did you have to change lanes when the pandemic hit. And I used to joke a lot with guests from TEP and TMC, another great partner of ours, where would community events be without support of TEP and TMC? Because everyone I go to, proud sponsors. Mm. And even with that, you figured out ways to support communities and families and people in the face of the past year of the major pandemic. So when it comes to reliability, where does TEP stand in terms of ranking among other electric companies in the U.S.? And how do you even measure that? How do you know where you stand, or do you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. We track that. That's something
I figured.
That,
you're an engineer.
we track it every day. I'm really proud to say that TEP ranks in the top quartile of all the electric utilities across our country. And we measure that with a metric called SADI, which is System Average Interruption Duration Index. It's a mouthful.
It is. But you said it well.
Like an engineer. It essentially represents the amount of time that a typical customer went without power during the year. And so in 2020, we're proud to say that we had a record year, and we were at 99.99% reliability on that SADI scale. And all of that within a year, as you recall, was record heat, a pandemic. Like, could there be stakes any higher that we really needed to make sure that the power was on? Absolutely. But we've also proud to say that we've been making significant progress. So, just the SADI index is measured in minutes. So it's a number of minutes that a customer is out in a year. And in 2017, that number was 65 minutes. Then in 2019, we were down to 54 minutes. And last year, down to 48 minutes. So that was a record for us. And we're going to continue to keep pushing on that and continue to be as reliable as we can.
You know, I was looking at those statistics and I thought, I guarantee you that in 20 years of being a TEP customer, my power has never been down for a total of 48 minutes. So I feel pretty lucky about that. Sometimes 5 minutes, sometimes 10, but I don't think in 20 years it added up to 48 minutes. I don't know, but I feel pretty blessed to be able to say that. So what do you do about the temperatures? And I don't want it to sound like a naive question, but we are experiencing record-breaking heat in the Southwest. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about temperatures, since this is a global national podcast, temperatures in the 110 to 113 range. How do you prepare for that kind of pressure that it puts on the grid? What are you doing? Are you sleeping? That's really my big question.
Yeah, right. There are certainly folks that are not sleeping. We are up 24/7 monitoring the grid to make sure that we're keeping the lights on. And we do forecast. We have a weather expert on staff that's telling us, you know, this is what the weather's going to do. This is how your solar systems are going to produce or not produce. This is what the wind's going to do. As we rely on these renewable resources, we have a little less control. And so we need to make sure that we're forecasting how that weather is going to impact those resources. And so it's every single day, every single hour, we're looking at what resources do we have available and how are we going to ultimately provide enough power to meet the load requirements within our city.
So it's never ending. And I don't know, you've been there a long time, but one of our dear friends is Bobby Gentry, and he worked for TEP forever. And I love his stories. I mean, he was the guy in the room and watching what was going on. And he's another person that among the hundreds, if not thousands of people that work for TEP and has nothing but good to say about it. So before we move on to sustainability, I have to fit this in somewhere. And I wasn't quite sure where to pop it in, but I am, what keeps me up at night sometimes are the realities about cyber attacks, relentless, horrific, terrifying. I can't say enough about how I feel about this topic. And Dave, before we got on, talked about, you know, he takes a ferry to Martha's Vineyard. And what are you doing? He said they attacked their whole, you know, ticket system. And it disrupted service for 3 days. It's a little ferry company in the Northeast. So what is TEP doing? I mean, is this one of the things that keeps you up nights besides the heat?
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. And this is a topic that our board covers every time we meet. And we actually spent a couple hours on it yesterday. So we are seeing these ransomware events pick up. And that's scary, but I think even more scary for us would be a more of like a terrorist type attack where they're trying to stop our ability to provide service. And so the industry as a whole, the electric utility industry, has a lot of safeguards in place, requirements that minimum requirements that we have to meet. And I'm proud to say that TEP goes well beyond those requirements. We want to make sure that we're protecting our customer data and, you know, all of that payment information, but more so, we want to make sure that we're protecting our infrastructure and the ability to control our grid. We don't want a bad actor to come in and take over our grid and have the ability to turn things off. So we are monitoring that 24/7, but we have layers upon layers of security in place to make sure that we, you know, it's sort of like that Swiss cheese that you have to go through several different holes to really get to something within our system.
Yes. I mean, I have confidence because I've asked this of other people, but the attacks are getting so much more frequent and it's horrific. I mean, our family talks about it a lot, and it's what good comes from any of it? None, of course, and they know that. So let's not linger on that very depressing subject. I'm glad we're in good hands. So when it comes to TEP, from where I sit, one of the most impressive areas of growth and rapid acceleration, having been partners for almost 12 years, if anybody can believe that, certainly centers around sustainability and providing power from renewable resources. And I was thinking about it, the first guest I ever had on when I was doing in studio was Paul Bonavia. And he was so awesome. And he came to our studio and he said, I'm at Mrs. Graves World International headquarters. But he laid out a scenario of how much a kilowatt hour costs from, and believe me, don't get me into the questioning of what this all means, because I'm not an engineer, of how much it costs to produce electricity from coal versus solar. And that has totally flipped. And I understood what he was saying, because then, you know, solar was so cost prohibitive. But now you are doing so much in this arena. Most of the community, I would say, is doing the happy dance. So I'd love for you to take your time and walk us through not only your vision and your goals, but what's already happening. It's beyond impressive.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm glad you highlighted Paul Bonavia. He's was another mentor of mine and still involved in our company in some ways. So
and nobody ever says anything bad about him. Anytime you talk about anywhere out in the community, like, oh, didn't you love him? I did. I loved him.
Such a great guy.
Yeah.
So as you know, we announced last year our integrated resource plan, which is working towards providing 70% of our power from renewable resources. And that's an 80% reduction in carbon emissions by 2035. So pretty aggressive goal. This is a plan for a cleaner, greener grid. And it was selected with input from stakeholders from our community. And it balances our goals of both this clean environment and also affordability and reliability. So we have some really exciting projects that have recently come online, and more than doubled our community scale clean energy resources this year. So we just had our 250 megawatt Oso Grande wind farm in southeastern New Mexico come online. And just to put that in perspective, 250 megawatts can serve the annual electric needs for nearly 100,000 homes.
Wow.
So big project.
Big, big.
Yeah. And just to add to the size of the project, it's on 24,000 acres of desert. It's out in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico. We have 62 turbines, and some of them are over 600 feet from the ground to the tip of the tallest blade. So just imagine that.
Wow.
pretty massive. Yeah. Makes you feel small when you're standing next to them. And this site was chosen for its proximity to an existing transmission line and also the strong wind in that area, of course. And then the production curve for this particular site, the hours that we get the most of our production is actually really complementary to our solar production because the wind is higher when the sun's not shining. So it's a great resource for us.
And I kid you not, Susan, I have literally called Francisco Castro on the road going to Taos, New Mexico, saying, all I'm seeing are these huge trucks with wind turbines on them. Mm-hmm. They are so big. And so I know that this is, I said, are they probably going to your array? And he said, they probably are, because they are big and it's happening. And New Mexico has a lot of wind. My husband is from there, and he is not a big wind fan because he grew up with it. Okay, what about the Wilmot Energy Center?
Yeah, so that is actually our largest renewable energy resource in Tucson, and it's located on 1,100 acres just southeast of the Tucson International Airport. So this is 100 megawatts of solar and also 30 megawatts of battery storage. And so those solar arrays feed the batteries, which is a great combo for us. And just to put that in context, this project can serve the electric needs of about 35,000 homes. So also, you know, pretty big project. And it includes 314,000 photovoltaic panels.
Wow.
So just days and days of,
no kidding,
of PV panels. And then they're designed to track the movement of the sun so we can optimize our production.
So back in the day when I think it was the city of Tucson, it might have been TEP, but I think it was the city, I don't know who it was, took us on tours, bus tours. And that was one of the places we went to, and it blows your mind. It looks like miles and miles of solar. It's a vast solar array. And we went to Davis-Monthan, where they also have a lot of solar going on. So mm-hmm. you can just see the acceleration and the excitement. So what's in the crystal ball that you want to share? What's coming soon that we can get excited about?
Yeah, another big project coming online this year. So lots of projects all at once, which is exciting. This is another wind project in Gallup, New Mexico, or near Gallup, and it's 99 megawatts. The project name is Borderlands Wind Project, and we expect it to be in service by the end of this year. So lots of renewables coming online just in 2021.
Yeah, it's fun to watch, and it's exciting, especially if you're Mrs. Green. Okay, now let's talk about the touchy subject, because there is so much pressure, not just here in Tucson, but around the country, around the globe, about mm-hmm. replacing coal-fired power plants. And without being a total, you know, sellout, when someone from TEP sat down, put my face in their hand and said, listen to me, it's just not that easy. You don't just flip a switch. And went on and on and on about the complicated process involved, because at the end of the day, this is what they said to me, people want their lights on. They want their air conditioning to work. So yeah. You don't just say, okay, we're going to shut those down now. And it would be catastrophic. So where are you in terms of replacing coal-fired power plants?
Yeah, so we are going to be replacing all of our coal-fired power plant resources over the next 15 years. And that will reduce our total tons of carbon dioxide by 50 million tons. So that's equivalent to taking 750,000 cars off the road.
Wow.
In over a 15-year period. But it is complex, because the nice thing about coal is you've got the fuel sitting on the ground.
Yep.
So you know you have it available. You know that those turbines are going to work.
Right.
We've got technology that is progressing and allowing us to move away from that resource. I think another consideration is to think about all the lives that are impacted in those communities that the workers work at the power plant, and those communities are built around those power plants. And so we want to be mindful of helping those communities transition in a way that they can continue to have economic support.
So many moving parts, and that's true. And I've interviewed people from like the Navajo Nation, and it's a tough one. It really is. And lots of people are helping, and it's a transition that has to happen because it's 113 degrees and climate change is accelerating. So I just applaud the efforts, and it can't happen soon enough. I'm sure you agree. So let's talk about affordability and reliability, because when we just had a brief chat off air, an electric bill can be a major part of someone's budget, especially if they lived in a house that was too big for them and not energy efficient. So how do you, in the transition, support affordability and reliability?
Yeah, it really is important to do this at a pace that we can transition while supporting affordability and reliability. And we know that solar and wind can't provide energy around the clock. So we still need flexible 24/7 resources that do support this transition to a cleaner, greener grid. And so you're probably familiar, I think, Gina, you've probably even been out there to our reciprocating engines that are our latest, I would call them renewable support project. And they're natural gas fired reciprocating engines.
Right.
We installed them last year, and they are able to ramp up quickly. And so, you know, there's a lot of fluctuations with renewable power. And so these units can respond to those fluctuations so that we don't lose power when the wind stops blowing or the sun ducks behind some clouds. And then over time, we expect that battery storage will play a larger and larger role in supporting reliable service, you know, with these intermittent renewable resources. In fact, the 30 megawatts that I mentioned that we've got out at the Wilmot Energy Center, we used it yesterday.
Wow.
Just, it was so hot yesterday.
Yes.
We had had a power plant that went offline, and we were able to supplement that with the battery storage. So it's really a great resource, and we'll be building our battery storage capability over time.
And the person that did that lecture to me, and it was a very respectful lecture, not in the negative sense, was Dan Hogan. And we had stuff on a napkin, and he said, when this happens, this happens. And when this happens, this happens. He explained it to me, a consumer and a non-engineer. And it made me much more of a champion for what the challenges are. And certainly the biggest challenge continues to be storage. And I hope there's miracles occurring in that research and development sector, that we get great news every day.
Yeah,
so for sure. You have a commitment to the customers. I believe that.
We do.
What is it when it comes to rooftop solar? What are you doing with customers with rooftop solar?
Yeah, so we help our customers connect their rooftop solar arrays so that those are also contributing to this cleaner, greener grid. And so we have over 29,000 distributed generation solar power systems that are connected to our local grid, and we're connecting more almost every day. So we're partnering with our customers if they want to install solar to help make that connection to our system.
Okay, and it's so important. So when it comes to resilient communities and leadership, I always think about, it's not just about what you're doing. It's about what we're doing as customers. I mean, you can't do it without us. So what are your thoughts on that? Do customers have a shared responsibility when it comes to energy efficiency and energy reduction? What are your honest thoughts about what's our job?
Absolutely. Everyone can play a role here, and everyone can help by participating in energy efficiency, and that supports our greater sustainability. So we offer many, many programs that help our customers use energy more efficiently. And energy efficiency is an important part of our strategy to serve our customers' future energy needs.
So I had a guest on the show from DEP, and they challenged me about signing up for something. And I don't remember all the names, but it's my TEP management system or whatever. And you probably know what it is. And I signed up for it. So guess what? I get a report every month on how I'm doing. And it's sometimes it's pejorative. And sometimes it's like, whoa, way to go. We are turning off more lights. We are keeping the thermostat a little bit higher in this ungodly heat. So my last question when it comes to the sustainability piece, it might be the one I'm the most excited about. And people don't believe me when I tell them this, like in social settings, that we are really going to electrify America, that we are going to see it. We're going to see it sooner than later. It really is a game changer. You know, I literally get goosebumps talking about it just for the small role that I've played in putting some partnerships together with Chapman and Hotel Congress and Local First. So what are you excited about when it comes to the electrification of America or the transportation sector? Is it really going to happen, Susan? I'm going to hold you to this.
For sure. I think it's just picking up speed.
And I do too.
It is a game changer. That's a great term. So the transportation sector is the single largest contributor for carbon emissions.
Right.
The utilities, you know, are now in second place there. And so this switch to zero emission vehicles will really help us get to that cleaner future faster. So we're doing all we can to promote electric vehicles. We're offering special rates for our EV owners. We just installed 2 fast chargers out in front of our headquarters building downtown.
Can't wait to try it and plug my vehicle in.
Yep. And we know that this is a big decision for people to shift to an electric vehicle. And so we offer an online comparison tool on our website so customers can kind of dig into the details and run an analysis based on their own driving habits and have a better idea if, you know, an electric vehicle is really right for them. And then we're doing our part. We're trying to transition our own fleet as well as helping other companies make that transition, you know, offering our expertise, providing, you know, the infrastructure needed for their charging stations. So trying to hit this on every aspect that we can.
So the Chapman Automotive Group is another great partner of Mrs. Green's World. And as part of that wonderful wonderfulness, they provide me with a vehicle each year to write about, blog about, take pictures about, you know, promote. Mm-hmm. And I am the happy, proud owner at this point of an Audi SUV, an e-tron. Mm-hmm. And what I want to say to people is most of us only drive around town. The number of miles we drive a day is ridiculously low.
Yep.
So it works for me all the time. I plug it in. I haven't had to go to a gas station since like last August. And the only challenge is we took it on a trip to Taos and it took quite a bit longer. And I just say to people, you know, it makes you stop and smell the roses and it makes you plan your trip more judiciously instead of just stopping and putting in gas mindlessly. But it feels really good. And I think that over time, we'll see battery packs in the back of cars where we can just switch out batteries. I mean, who knows? I am the optimist when it comes to this sector. I'm excited.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of evolving technology in that space, and I mean, those are just fun cars to drive. They're really zippy, right? Fastest cars on the road.
I was driving my husband the other day. We went somewhere, and I was driving, and he always says he's putting his life in his hands with me behind the wheel. And I get this teenage impulse to like beat someone off the line. So the light turned green and I was up to 60 miles an hour in like 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And he said to me, "What is wrong with you?" I said, and it didn't even make any noise. It's so quiet. You can sneak up on people. So let's move on to community support. And you and I know there's no minimizing this. We could have you back for an entire interview about the ways TEP provides community support. Mm. And I think there are 2 pieces to this. One that addresses energy and its affordability, and the other is your solid commitment to philanthropy and volunteerism. So let's start with the affordability piece and highlight some of the things that you actually do to provide affordable energy. It's really important.
Yeah, thank you. It's, you know, community support is really part of who we are at TEP. And affordable energy, I think, is the foundation for our community's success. You know, powering our growth and our economic development And our rates, Gina, I don't know if you know this, but they've risen at less than the rate of inflation for the last two decades. So we're really proud of that. And, you know, a big part of that is because we're mindful of how efficient our operations are and do all we can to keep our costs down. And so the average, our rates have increased on average 1% annually through up to 2020, just the end of last year. So energy is more affordable also through our Lifeline Low Income Assistance Program, which provides monthly discounts of $18 for participating customers. So that's another way that we can kind of offset the cost for the folks that need that extra help. And then for people that want to kind of join in and help with to support their neighbors, we are offering a program. It's called our Hero Program, and it allows customers to round up their bill to the next dollar. So just a small increment, but over time, we have had customers contribute more than $1.6 million to this program since 2011. And last year, we received more donations than ever before.
That's wonderful.
I love that program.
I love that part, too, about Tucson. It's a very giving community, if you ask me.
Yes, for sure.
And you help people that fall behind on their bills. And I know that because of interviewing some other of your team. There's payment extensions, payment plans, and people actually answer the phone. I want to just go on record saying I have heard that. You're not getting a little teleprompter or a prompter for the whole entire conversation. So I think that really matters, and it's there, weatherization program, all those things. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about giving back. You are a corporation that I would call not just check writers, but sweat equity partners when it comes to things like removing buffalo grass and building houses with Habitat for Humanity. TEP shows up in their blue shirts with their white logo. And, you know, I can't help but mention Wendy Erica Worden. She called me one day, and she was out at Saguaro East. It was freaking hot as heck. And she was pulling buffalo grass. And she's an executive at Tucson Electric Power. And I went, you go, girl. And I hope you pull a lot. Pull some for me. It was really funny. So talk about your commitment to giving back and why it's clearly so much a part of the fabric of your corporate culture. It's not a mandate.
No.
It's an exciting experience.
Yeah. So we really want to give back to our community, both through philanthropy and volunteerism. So, you know, we contribute more than $1.6 million in a year to our local nonprofit groups. And those come from our corporate resources, not our customers' rates. And our employees at the same time contribute thousands of hours to causes that are really closest to their hearts. You know, Wendy Erica Weirden's great about organizing events that
she really
our employees say, hey, I want to be part of that. And she helps us get involved in that.
She makes it fun.
And I love it when you see the swarm of blue shirts, you know, diving into some community effort. And we're really proud that 25% of our employees spend time volunteering at these community events and for the nonprofit organizations that they support. And of course, last year we had to scale back a little bit just, you know, for safety reasons, but we still found ways to participate safely. You know, we got to be part of the large food drives like the Feed Tucson and the Thanksgiving Harvest food drives, and those both benefit the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona.
And I am, when I did a show on that too, I sound like a broken record because I love to do shows about what all you're doing. And the nimbleness, if that's a word, you were so nimble in shifting what you were doing because of the pandemic and just stepped right up. And the Feed Tucson is a perfect example of that. It's like, okay, what are we going to do now? So you have served so many community organizations. I've been here 45 years, and it's been, ever since I was aware of it, TEP contributes, gives back, supports. How do you decide? Do you have major areas of focus that you use to as criteria to decide what you can and cannot fund? Because I'm sure the requests are many.
Yeah, and we'd love to just help everyone. And, you know, of course, this past year, the needs have just been incredible. But we do try to focus in three main areas. So low-income assistance, education, and the environment are our three top priorities.
So that helps with the vetting. It's really tough. Okay,
I can't help myself. I have to share my thoughts about your Ecos team.
It's like, I'm doing a shameless plug. I was on a call yesterday with the Ecos team from around the state.
And I say this, anybody who knows me and you know me, I speak from my heart. Mm-hmm. What I heard and witnessed was mind-blowing. And the fact that I was very quiet for most of it speaks volumes about how impressed I was. I was like, what? In terms of the organic growth, the initiatives that employees are taking on their own, the creativity, and I believe pace of the leader, pace of the team. I really do believe that. So what are your thoughts on the importance of employee engagement when it comes to building resilient communities and green teams? Where does that fit into your picture and your vision?
Yeah, you know, we're doing our part as a corporation and, you know, this transition and all the things that we've talked about today, but it's really become a great outlet through this Ecos team for individuals to say, hey, I want to make a difference. I want to do something that will impact our climate, impact our environment for our community. And so we're just finding ways to really support what our employees want to do. And I love that about our employees is that they have such heart for our community and for our environment. And this is just a way that we've helped them organize to make a big difference as a team.
And it was kind of funny because I do consult with them and do, you know, some dot connecting and all of that. And I got off that call and said, hey, Murph, you better up your game because some of these people are like, they're way out ahead of you when they talked about printers and printer cartridges and the impact of that. I never even brought that up at TEP. And it was so affirming from a year ago where there was a lot of radio silence on these calls. This was bombarded stuff in the chat, raising hands, applause, people talking about what they were doing. So to witness that in less than a year, it was really so affirming to me about the corporate culture, which is a perfect segue. I want to end on a very high note because to me, this is one of the biggest takeaways for people that are listening and certainly has been one of the most affirming experiences for me in this journey. So you are one of Tucson's largest employers, and I have done, I can't even count the number of interviews I've done. And what I normally say is, so you've been at TEP for 12 years? You've been there for 14? You've been there for 22? You've been there for 15? Over and over and over. When someone says they're a newcomer, I say, well, where have you been? Why are you so late to the party? What's the magic? Because sitting in my studio, if people were unhappy, I guarantee you I would get it out of them, not even on purpose. People want to stay. The Raptor guy, he's like effusive about what he's doing. And I remember these people. So what are you doing that really makes people want to make a career out of working at TEP? And it's not a fluff question. To me, we have to do more and more and more of this because the employee is demanding more in terms of workplace satisfaction. So what are you putting in the water over there?
I think we have a great track record and commitment to providing a workplace that's focused on values. And these are values everyone can get behind. You know, safety, operational excellence, continuous learning, sustainability, appreciation of diversity, and a strong ethical core. And these values then serve our employees so that they can bring their best selves to work. And I think that not only our employees, but our customers as well benefit from a workforce that's super motivated, super engaged. And, you know, I think that it just creates this environment where people feel at home and they feel valued, respected, and heard, and they want to show up and do their best every day. And they want to stay with the company for that reason.
And even during a pandemic, nothing stopped with our partnership during the pandemic. And to have some of the staff working from home, Kayla with her little baby, all the joy of that, what I call a sustainable corporate culture, I think it matters now more than ever. I mean, the disease part of what's going to happen when you go back to work. And you have to have all hands on deck if you're going to, you know, implement measures and all of that. And I think you have it. I think you've been really purposeful about that. And I wanted to not finish the show without talking about that.
Yeah, thank you. We're really proud of how our employees have adapted. You know, we run a 24/7 operation and there's more than half of our employees still working on site every single day. So we had to make sure that we could do that in a safe way. And then also transitioning as many people as we can to work from home. And just overall, protecting each other and promoting public health while we maintain safe and reliable service.
So I wasn't sure if I was going to do this, if it was too cliche or not. And I don't think it is at all. That's what I decided. I asked myself, self, is it? And I got a resounding, no, it is not. You are a woman in a position of power for one of the biggest electric companies, a highly performing electric company. You're owned by Fortis, which is even bigger, based mm-hmm. in Canada. What has been, like, first of all, are there many other Susan Grays out there? Are you seeing more women advance in these positions? Because typically, I don't see that. So I want to know what your view is, which would be much more based in fact than my observations.
Yeah, I'd say it's a pretty low percentage, but it's growing. And Fortis continues to promote. We have 11 companies, 11 CEOs, and just named another female CEO a couple weeks ago. So really, you know, making sure that we have that right blend of diversity and a culture of inclusion to, but we're intentional about preparing women for success. You know, we have our Women in Energy resource group at TEP, and it's all about preparing women for the future and helping them just build on the talents that they already bring to the job.
And it shows. I mean, it really shows. And I just wondered, and having had Paul Bonavia in that job and Dave Hutchins in that job, they certainly would not put up any barriers to accelerating the careers of women. They're both highly evolved men, and I have a lot of respect for both of them. Yeah. I was sad when Dave was leaving, but then when they announced you were there, it was like there was lots of happy dancing going on. So it's like, that's really good. So is there anything that you're wishing I had asked or something that we have not covered that you think is really important to get out there? I think we did a very efficient, exciting, and fun job in covering some pretty important topics about your vision. Is there anything else you want to add about what, you know, what our listeners should know or what might be fun or of interest?
Yeah, I think I really appreciate all the questions you asked, and I think we've covered, you know, the highlights. I guess if there's one more thing I'd love to talk about, it's our responsibility to promote social justice and kind of what we're doing. You know, we were all floored, really shaken last year by the killing of George Floyd, and I think it caused our nation and our company and every employee to really stop and think about, you know, what are we doing to promote diversity, equity, and inclusion? It's been part of our culture for many years, but what could we do different? What it, you know, kind of a new resolve that we had after that event. And so we've committed to even stronger support of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it's really, I think, at the heart of our company's values. I mentioned that earlier when I was listing off our values. And so part of our recent work is we've just been intentional about extending our giving to, you know, we're not just focused on what we're doing inside the company, but what can we do for our whole community? And so our philanthropy is trying to reach groups that are focused on promoting social justice and equity, whether that's providing seed funding for small businesses that are owned by underrepresented residents or providing assistance to BIPOC communities and just looking for volunteer opportunities that are designed to promote a more equitable and inclusive society. And that includes, you know, we painted those murals last year after the riots. And so that was a fun project to do at our headquarters downtown. But just, you know, really committed. I think we have an even higher awareness this past year of how we can make an impact both in our company and in our community.
It matters so much. It matters so much. I was on a call yesterday with the Green Champions program with the YWCA and the House of Neighborly Services and Local First. And, you know, we were talking about the vulnerability of the underserved population, the marginalized communities and cooling centers. And I just have to tell you, Susan, I'm not blowing smoke. When these conversations happen, So many times we're in the group and say, well, we can ask TEP or we can ask TMC or we can ask, you know, there's organizations here that just are top of mind to people when it comes to being part of the solution. And I think that really matters. You're a utility company and I'm Mrs. Green and I get excited about the stuff you're doing. And I think that says a lot because I'm not excited about a lot of energy companies. Believe me, I'm really glad I read it. I'm like, oh my God, thank God I don't live there. I'd be getting death threats for some of them. They're not all as forward thinking as I think that you are and that utility company should be, because we only have one planet. It's mm-hmm. going to be all hands on deck or we're not going to have a lot of hands. So my last words, I don't have many, but they're all about well-deserved praise for our guest, her leadership, and her impact. I don't actually know, other than what Susan mentioned, about how many female CEOs there are in the country and around the world. But as she said, it's not a huge number. So not only is Susan Gray leading the charge for this major corporation, she's doing it with passion and enthusiasm, commitment, and certainly lots of experience. And as I said, when I heard that Dave Hutchins, Susan's predecessor, was leaving, I was really sad. But I had so much admiration and respect for him, and I thought, well, what's next? He's got to pick a winner. And I don't think he just picked the winner, but happy surprise, it's Susan Gray and all she brings to the table. And just a little inside edition scoop from Mrs. Green. The staff at TEP were thrilled when you were announced for the heir apparent, and they continue to be thrilled and inspired and ready to follow you, their fearless leader, wherever the plans are to take them. We are environmental educators here at Mrs. Green's World, and we could not be prouder of this partnership with TEP and the role they play in helping spread the good, green, sustainable, and socially just words and actions about what this utility company is doing to help build resilient communities. It's beyond impressive. So, Susan, thanks for being here. I know the demands on you are many. Thanks for your leadership, for all you do, and for your team that's making such a difference in making our world a better place. I am very grateful, and I know lots of people in this community are. So thank you for being here.
Thank you, Gina. I really appreciate your partnership and all you do to help TEP and our whole community.
And it's fun.
Really love being here with you today.
I loved it. And my final thanks always is to you, our listeners, because it's so obvious. Without you, there would be no us. And my plea, stay hydrated. Don't leave your house without water. Don't drive in your car without water. Don't take the bus without water, because hydration is going to help keep us alive. So Susan Gray, thanks for crossing my path, and I hope our paths cross many times in the future.
Thank you, Gina.